Go behind the wheel and under the hood on everything automotive with High Speed Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Welcome back to the podcast. This is High Speed Stuff. I'm Ben, and I'm here with Scott. Scott, how are you today?
I'm fine. I'm always fine.
Oh, that's awesome, man. That's what I like about you. Your sort of tenacious optimism, you know?
I am optimistic.
Yeah. You are optimistic, and I hope it's rubbing off on me some. But one thing I also noticed about you is, you know, my friend, you're a little bit competitive.
You think so?
I kind of see it in you, you know, not with me.
I'm more competitive than you.
Sure.
I bet I am.
I just got that.
Okay, yeah.
But speaking of competitions, cue segue.
Yeah.
We talked a little bit earlier in an earlier podcast about a very competitive race.
Yep.
That some went so far as to call a great race. You remember this one?
I do.
Word on the street is this topic is interesting enough that it deserves a closer look.
Oh, for sure it does.
Yeah. A longer look.
A much longer look. We'll dedicate the whole podcast to it today.
I am on your team.
All right.
Let's do it. Whole podcast.
So, well, if I'll catch you up to speed basically on what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Please, you know some about this as well, so interject when you have a chance. But the Great Race of 1908.
Yes.
So we're talking a long time ago, 101 years ago at this point.
Mm-hmm.
The race went from New York to Paris, 22,000 miles, and it took the competitors at the end, it was 6 months overall. Not everyone took 6 months to finish, but 6 months was the final final person crossing the line. Went across three continents, just an amazing, unbelievable, feat of mankind, I guess. Yeah. I mean, man and machine, really. It was an ultimate test at that time because there weren't roads in most cases, or where there were roads, they were extremely poor roads. The weather conditions they dealt with, you know what cars looked like in 1908.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't what we're talking about now. They didn't have climate control. You know,
right.
They didn't even have sealed interiors, really. A lot of these cars that competed in this race didn't even have windshields. You know, they had the giant lamps on the front, you know, to light the way. They were huge cars. Have you ever seen the Beverly Hillbillies?
Yes.
And you remember the car that, you know, they're riding into town on with Granny in the back, you know, on the rocker chair? That's a little extreme, but, you know, that's the type of car we're talking about here with those big wagon wheel tires. You know, they had rubber tires, of course, but they had wooden spokes. They were giant cars, and to even think about crossing the U.S. at the time was unheard of. I mean, you just really didn't do something like that. And now we're talking about driving from New York all the way to Paris
via San Francisco, Siberia, and what else?
Oh man, they went through. Let's see, they ended up going across Japan. That was kind of an error. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But they didn't really intend to go there, but they did. Sounds funny, but you ended up in Japan and drove across it. They went completely across Siberia, which you can imagine is treacherous and
dangerous. Most people don't want to do that today.
No, not even now. And I mean, it's just extreme hardship. Went through Berlin and ended up in Paris. Mm-hmm. It was really, really, like I said, just I guess you can call it an epic test.
Mm-hmm.
Something that people couldn't even imagine doing something like this. Then, even now, it would be rough.
We've mentioned a couple of the challenges that they faced, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Lack of roads, right?
Yeah.
The cars at the time, at least the cars in this competition, left them pretty much at the mercy of the weather.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And the thing is, I mean, the race started in a blizzard. It started in New York in a blizzard. The worst storm of 1908, I think, is what they called it.
Really?
And so there was one team, a French team, that only made it 44 miles. And we're talking out of a 22,000-mile race. One of the French teams only made it 44 miles.
That's not very far at all.
That's not very far at all. But when you consider that the other teams, it took them, I think it was 13 days just to get to Chicago from New York. And normally that trip should have taken them 4 days, I think they said, under, you know, the right conditions at the time. Now, you can drive from New York to Chicago today in one day.
Right.
That's easy. But they didn't have that road system that we have now. And so when they leave in the snowstorm, and, you know, they maybe have a three-man team, one guy's driving the car, the other two are out in front with snow shovels, shoveling a pathway for this car from, you know, from New York to Chicago.
Wow.
Not the entire way, of course,
sure.
But where they had to get out and clear drifts out of the way and allow that passage.
So it's
an unbelievable trip, and if you read about this race, you'll understand what I'm saying, that, you know, everything was hard. nothing was easy at all. I mean, everything was difficult. So when you look at, you know, some of the challenges I faced, it wasn't just, you know, that there were no roads or poor roads. Of course, there's no snow plows. You know, mm-hmm. cars are pretty new at this time. I think they're 10 or 12 years old at the most. I mean, you know, if the first car was developed in 1896, I think mm-hmm. it was, this is 1908. I mean, how much further do you think they had, you know, come from that? Quite a bit, but, you know, by no means like what we have right now. Not even close. I mean, look back at the cars from 1908 and you'll see what I mean. Other challenges that they had were a lot of these areas didn't even have maps. You know, they just didn't exist. So, you know, you get out in certain desolate regions where, you know, there's no map. So how do they know where to go? Well, they were using compasses and, you know, navigation devices like you'd find on ships.
Probably asking people.
Yeah, I mean, and they're navigating at night using stars. And it was really...
That's wild.
Unbelievable. Now, when they got further in the race, you know, they go to other continents, there were language barriers. They couldn't, you know, describe what they're trying to get to, you know, the next town they're trying to get to or how to get there. That was tough. One other thing, no gas stations. If you consider it, really, I mean, major cities would have gas stations, that's for sure, because, you know, the car was around. It wasn't, you know, everywhere. It wasn't widespread. A lot of these cars, they had enormous gas tanks, and talking like maybe 2, 3, 4, 5, even 6 tanks that would carry fuel. And some of these cars carried as much as 200 gallons of fuel with them, which is enormous. I mean,
yeah.
My car, I think, has 11 or 12 gallons.
Yeah, most cars have like an 8 to 14 gallon tank, right?
Yeah, something like that, yeah. And I mean, so that's unbelievable that, you know, they were special made, of course, for this race, you know, that they would carry, you know, 175 gallons in this one tank and then 50 in another or whatever it would be. I guess they prepared for it as much as they could. And when the word of the race got out that, you know, this is going to happen, I think it was the Standard Oil Company said that they would provide fuel along the way. They'd make sure the competitors were able to get fuel. And if they did run out, they would send somebody to take care of the situation.
It would be
taken care of. And that type of thing happened a lot where, you know, they would maybe break down and take days for them to repair these cars. You know, like maybe the gears would be stripped in the transmission and they're stuck in the mud, you know, somewhere in, you know, the middle of the United States somewhere, you know, axle deep in mud with no transmission. And what do? I mean, you walk to the nearest town, you telegraph to get, you know, the part sent to you, and then you come back and you make the repair in the mud and then carry on.
See, that's one thing that I heard. I heard that the mud at times in both Siberia and in the U.S. was worse than the snow.
Yeah, I heard that too. And I mean, that makes sense. And they said that, I think there was even one point where they said that, you know, it was
4 days, right?
Yeah, that's right. You know what I'm going to go for here.
So
go ahead. What was it?
I think, now correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I think they made it 60 miles across the span of 4 days in just this mud-filled, I don't know, what would you call it? A quagmire, I guess, is what it really is.
Yeah, that's right. That was in Siberia.
Yeah.
So here they are, you know, crossing Siberia, which, you know, that's almost like a joke. You know, you'd be banished to Siberia. You know, that's where they would send you. Desolate, just cold. It was cold, extremely cold. But they said that the mud was the worst thing about that part of the trip. I mean, it was just horrible. Can you imagine going, you know, spending 4 days and just having to continually pull your enormous car out of mud?
Yeah, I don't know, man.
I mean, I think it's the point where, you know, they're hooking up, you know, ropes to themselves and trying to pull it out using their own bodies and, you know, just really difficult.
Just pushing with manpower.
I don't know how they carried on, really, at certain points. I'm running down this list of challenges, and I'll tell you, it doesn't get any better because, you know, there's mud and there's cold and there's health concerns, you know, because they're traveling out, you know, I mean, just exposed to the elements these guys were, all of them. There was also the potential of theft and sabotage. I mean, whether that's, you know, plants along the way, you know, we'll never know, you know, that if there was any kind of conspiracy going on there, that, you know, people were stealing other team supplies or maybe not, you know, the racers themselves, but maybe they had somebody working with them. I don't know. That's
conspirators.
A little... Sure, that's, you know, I'm not sure if that's true or not, but, you know, it could have just been someone looking for, you know, whatever happened to come their way, you know, just...
But it did happen.
It did, yeah. In fact, I guess there was one of the French teams before they started the race. I mentioned sabotage. They had to watch out for that. Someone threw a handful of bolts into their transmission case prior to the race, and that would have no doubt destroyed the transmission in that car.
What a
jerk. The mechanic, for whatever reason, I don't know why, he was cautious enough or weary enough that he was able to determine that something wasn't right, and he checked it out and found all these bolts just laying in there that clearly had just been thrown in by somebody hoping to ruin their chances.
Man, so sabotage.
Yeah, and they also had to worry about spare parts, which you just mentioned. Parts were days away. They weren't. It's not like you could pull into the nearest repair shop and get it taken care of. A lot of these towns, they had never even seen a car when they entered. It was this unbelievable thing to have a car come into your town. So, it was a big event. Of course, when you break down, you're not always in a town either. You can maybe you can limp to a town. But, then you'd have to telegraph for the proper part to be sent and then make the repair yourself.
Right, they were in places that were absolutely cut off, too.
That's right, yeah. I mean, so, it may be a day's walk or 2 days' walk to the nearest town where you can even contact somebody to come and help you and then, find your way back, et cetera. And it was just a rough time. One other thing they had to worry about was wildlife. There were
wildlife, in
wolves and bears, tigers.
Tigers,
Siberian tigers.
Oh, not the Nebraskan variety.
Nope. They had,
really?
Had a lot of yeah, that's right. So they had a lot to worry about. I mean, making camp and you got to worry about all this going on.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It had to be during camp because normally a wild animal, especially any kind of mammal, would be very... very hesitant to go close to anything that sounded like a car, right?
I would think so, yeah. But, when it's not moving and they're broken down, that's another case, another story. One other thing that they had to worry about, and this kind of concludes my list of challenges. I mean, there were untold challenges. This is just my list here, but bandits. This is an odd thing to think about, but not only would they want to steal, the supplies that they had, they were carrying whatever they had for whatever reason they would be valuable to somebody that I don't know why. One thing that they were concerned about was the perception that these were wealthy individuals making this race. Here they come in their shiny cars. Well, they're not so shiny anymore, but here are these wealthy guys on this in this great car race that's going across the U.S. and it's well publicized. Mm-hmm. So towns were keeping up with who was in the lead during this whole time. The fact that it was well publicized, they knew where they were at all times, and there was worry that they were going to actually be kidnapped and held for ransom. There were concerns like that along the way too. So these guys had it rough, all around.
Well, let's take a closer look at these guys. Who are these teams? You said there were six teams, right?
Yeah, that's right. There's six teams. There were three teams. Again, they kind of represent the world really at the time, the motoring world, anyways.
Okay.
There were three entries from France. There was one entry from Italy. One entry from Germany, and then one entry from the United States.
And that was our own Captain George Schuster, right?
That's right, yeah. He was our driver. And let's see, I'm trying to think of what happened with the French team. The French teams didn't even finish. None of them did. One of them, like I said, 44 miles into the quest there, they gave up after they ran into a snowbank, I think it was.
Uh-huh.
The other did not finish teams, I guess, for France. One went as far as Carroll, Iowa. And it broke down. That was like, I think it was at 1,200 miles.
Okay.
Another one was withdrawn by the manufacturer when it was crossing Japan.
Withdrawn by the manufacturer?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess they were just having too many problems, parts, and et cetera. I'm not exactly sure the details surrounding that.
Yeah.
The Italian team, which eventually in this race finished third.
Okay.
It took them the longest to finish this race, and that's the reason the race lasted 6 months.
They didn't
finish until September 17th of that year.
From February to September, then.
That's right.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, September 17th was the date that they finally arrived in Paris. Again, just to finish, unbelievable.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
The German team, something interesting about the German team, they actually crossed the line first in Paris. They actually came in first place. However, they were penalized, and I've got two conflicting reports here, 15 days or 30 days. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure because of they actually packed the train up and put it on a train and took it to, they took a train from Ogden, Utah to Seattle. At one point, and then had it repaired, and then shipped it from there to Ogden to Seattle, and then had it shipped, and then it was repaired overseas. So They suffered a penalty because of this, you know, because they weren't actually driving, so they had like a 15-day penalty for this.
Yeah,
there was a lot of this going on, you know. There's a penalty for this, and it's this many days. I mean, mm-hmm. kind of absurd to think about now, you know, with the speed that we run our races, you
right.
know, they have a 15-day penalty, but for whatever reason, that was the amount that they determined it should be. Then there's the United States team.
So the Germans came in second then?
Yeah, they actually came in second. They were first across the line in Paris,
mm-hmm.
and they actually. They won the race if you look at it between when they landed, I think it was in Russia, and mm-hmm. they crossed all the way to Paris. They won that stage of the race. However, in the United States, they didn't actually drive the entire way across the United States. They ended in Utah and then had it shipped on a train.
Yeah.
And you know that's the reason for the penalty. They didn't really complete the entire race.
So that came back to haunt them.
Yeah, that did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So they finished 4 days ahead of time, but with a penalty, they were second place. The Thomas Flyer pulled in 4 days later and was the true victor of the race, and they completed the whole thing. They truly did drive mm-hmm. the entire way.
Let's be fair to Italy, France, and Germany. This mm-hmm. was almost as much due to luck as it is to skill.
You know what? It's both. I mean, it's a lot of skill.
Yeah,
but
definitely.
Yeah, a great deal of that is luck, of course. Yeah,
I mean, you're one tiger and one bandit away.
That's right. Yeah.
From being an abandoned
that's
car.
Right. Yeah. And along the way, you know, it's something else interesting.
What's that?
They attended a lot of banquets and mm-hmm. You know, town functions. You know, like they'd pull into town, it'd almost be like a fair. You know, they'd be like people lining the streets and just excited to see them and excited to see the car and, you know, want to go for a ride in the car. And, you know, they were invited to banquets to dine with, you know, government officials, and it was
cool.
A big deal. This was really a big deal, and I think I read somewhere that it was also the first race where there were embedded reporters. So there were reporters along the way that were, you know, keeping up with this and you know, sending back headlines for the New York Times, and mm-hmm. I think there was also a Paris paper involved in this too.
You know what? That's a really good point, and maybe we should emphasize that point again. That the world was literally watching. I think there were around 250,000 people when these vehicles took off.
That's just in Times Square.
Just in Times Square.
That's the people that showed up to see the race start when they
not
fired.
Not the people lining the road as they drove off.
That was even greater.
So the entire globe was paying close attention to this.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I think it was you, Scott, who told me that when the American team, against a lot of very very high stakes and mm-hmm. against a lot of difficult odds, when they actually won, they met the president.
Yeah, they did. Right? Yeah, they came back. When they came back, now they're already back in the States celebrating before the Italian
sure,
team.
Sure, attending state fairs.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, before the Italian team even finished the race. Mm-hmm. So the Italian team is still racing at this point. They're going to finish on September 17th of that year.
Mm-hmm.
August 20th, I believe, is the day that they returned to the United States. And they had a ticker tape parade, and Teddy Roosevelt invited them to come to his home. I think it was in Long Island, mm-hmm. actually. It was what they called the Summer White House in Long Island. Is it Oyster Bay? Is that right? Something like that.
Yes.
From what I've heard, he was fond of people that did things. That was what he said. He said, I like people that do things.
Mm-hmm.
I want, you know, take action, you know, do something. And these guys definitely had done something like that. So he was impressed by them, and he wanted them to bring the car, which they did. And I inspected that, you know, kind of checked things out. One thing that he asked them is where they encountered the worst roads, or they told him where they encountered the worst roads, and they said that it was in the United States, believe it or not. So,
okay.
Now, in some places, to be fair, other places didn't even have roads.
Right.
But they said that the worst roads were in the United States. And he did take note of that, and actually there were some federal money that he freed up to improve the roadways in the United States. And there were a lot of programs after that, you know, just local areas, mm-hmm. you know, states, et cetera, you know, cities that would kind of push for the move for better roads because, yeah, the cars were around to stay, I guess, at that point.
Wow.
This kind of proved that cars were a reasonable mm-hmm. replacement for the horse, I guess.
Oh, yeah, worthwhile.
Yeah, sure, that it was worthwhile. I mean, not that it replaced what they could do and, you know, or exactly replaced what they mm-hmm. could do, but, you know, that it's not a passing fad that, you know, these cars are going to be around for a while.
Yeah. Speaking of being around for a while, I guess this might be a good thing for us to to touch on before we close here.
Mm-hmm.
When I had read that George, and I hope I'm saying his last name correctly, George Schuster.
Mm-hmm. I think that's it.
Okay. Yeah. You know, he still had his driver's license into his 90s.
Very good. Good for him.
You know, well, I would feel like if I almost circumnavigated the globe.
Sure, rightfully so. He could still drive when he's 90, I bet. He's probably the best driver ever.
Check this out, Scott. Have I got some news for you?
All right.
You obviously, you really like the great race. You know,
I do.
It's a passion point in history for you. It might not be too late for you to participate in the next great race.
Oh, what?
The next great race.
The next great race?
Uh-huh. Which you almost missed it. I wasn't going to bring it up. You almost missed it because it was originally going to be on May 30th, 2008, the centennial, right?
Oh, okay.
But because of some problems getting some visas in China due to some stuff with the Olympics in Tibet,
mm-hmm.
They had to put it off until, let me make sure I get this right, April 25th, 2009.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Now, I know you've got a lot of stuff going on, being the auto editor, you know.
So this is 101 years later.
Yes.
That they're going to run this race.
Yes, yes,
sir. It's going to be a dramatically different race, isn't it? What kind of, I may be catching you flat-footed here, do you know what kind of vehicles they're going to allow, or do they have to be a certain vintage, or are they?
You know what? That's a good point. I had.
It's okay if you don't.
I'm just catching you off guard. No. It's fine. I don't have the details exactly. So probably what you'd be better off doing is to join an American team or one of the American teams instead of just starting off in your own car, which
probably a good
you
idea.
Maybe because you don't want to be penalized. At the end of it, you
15
know.
Days.
Who knows? Yeah. Who knows how many days they'll take?
You know, it's funny when you say this, and I'll leave it at this. But even now, okay, I've got what I consider to be a pretty reliable car. I don't know about taking off on a around the world trip or this New York to Paris trip, even in the relatively comfortable car that I own.
Mm-hmm.
With I know that it's pretty reliable. I know that it would make it. I know we have roads the entire way now.
Sure.
I don't know. I honestly don't know how these guys even had the courage to take off on on that day in 1908. Mm-hmm. I just don't know how they did it. I mean, I really don't, because I can't even imagine doing it now. I think it's an amazing undertaking.
Yeah. Well, really, you know, is. What? I agree with you, Scott. Here's to them. Listeners probably
cheers.
Can't see it, but we're going to toast to
cheers.
Them to, because everybody raced in the great race in some way was a part of this magnificent feat. You know, whether or not they met the finish line.
Mm. Yeah, it was definitely a sense of national pride, I guess, when they won. And likewise around the world, they were all cheering for their own country, of course. And France, they didn't do so well, unfortunately. But everybody was still proud of their entrance.
Mm-hmm.
And just to make it, I don't know, even halfway across the United States at the time was unbelievable.
And there's a whole nother race in just a few months.
Yeah, that's right.
And
another shot at it.
Yeah, and you know what? This is the point where we tell our listeners, if you feel like participating in the great race, but think maybe you need to learn a little bit more about automobiles first, why not swing by the Auto Channel on HowStuffWorks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.